This is Tobias Baun.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And a time now to welcome Sukio. She's the founder of digital marketing agency Sukio, here to review today's papers. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Is it cold enough for you today, Sue?
It's lovely out there. It's really bright and fresh and freezing.
I don't know if you heard my story about having to scrape the car this morning.
Yes.
Did you have similar issues?
Well, I felt a lot of sympathy for the people taking off the sails at Streatham Windmill. So it's quite a chilly morning to be up a ladder and kind of trying to do this really intricate kind of unscrewing and stuff.
It's the thing, isn't it? Because if your hands go cold, you can't really do the intricate unscrewing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, a couple of centuries old or however, so it's quite a tricky job.
So they have our sympathy.
The wrong morning, yeah.
Now, you've been flicking through the papers for us this morning, and I guess we've got to start with the B word, really, haven't we?
Yes. Well, I did say to a couple of people I was coming on this morning, and someone said, can you see if you can get through the whole paper review without mentioning Brexit?
But it's impossible.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Well, let's start with it, and we'll deal with it first, then. So what are the papers saying this morning, Sue?
Well, we've got lots of plotting going on behind the scenes. The Sunday Times, like you saying in the headlines earlier, May is in meltdown. I think it's going to be an even more difficult week for her ahead. Just gets harder and harder. So we've got Dominic Grieve. He's been quite busy. He's trying to see if he can maybe suspend the departure from the EU, suspend Article 50. And the problem is that people don't want to leave without a deal. And I know there is a feeling at the moment that, can we just get on with it? Can we just get it sorted? Whatever, you know, if there's no deal, that's not a problem. But then that is going to cause a lot of problems for everybody.
It's becoming fairly inevitable that we'll get this extension, though, isn't it, I think?
Yes, that seems to be the issue here.
Because, frankly, it's not going to be sorted between now and the end of March, is it? Whatever happens.
No, and they've only had 2 years.
I know.
So, you know.
Well, it's only really in the last couple of months that anything's happened, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
And I guess for me, I remember thinking at the time it was very odd. There was this Brexit Secretary David Davis who was meant to be working on everything. And then suddenly there was the Prime Minister's Chequers plan, which was totally different. You think, well, that's like asking someone to do a job and then just deciding you're going to do it yourself, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And we've had all these different Brexit secretaries and all of these people, Boris Johnson, you know, Michael Gove, all these people, they all seem to have had a big part to play. And then they all back off and then they seem to snipe from the sidelines. You know, and Dominic Raab's the same. And you think, well, but you did have this position of power. You could have steered us through to a place where everything is a little bit more sorted by now and the clock is really ticking quite loudly, which is the thing that I find quite frustrating. You know, it's not just Theresa May that has made a hash of this. It's all the other people around her as well.
But there's a part of me still that admires her resilience in some ways, because so many bad things keep happening and yet she still keeps going.
Yes.
Regardless of whether we think her path is the right one that she's treading, you know, she's still committed to it and she's not thrown in the towel, whereas I guess many others would have done.
Well, it's interesting. I was giving blood the other day while the big vote was happening. And so while we sat around afterwards having our squash and our biscuit, I was checking Twitter and saying, oh, look, this is what's happened, you know. And so it was interesting to get the opinion from random people that I would just never bump into normally.
Like a focus group, exactly.
And some people were saying that they felt that she was getting lots of sexist attacks against her. You know, people were being mean to her because she was female. Mm. And it's interesting because I've never really seen that. And I'm quite quick to kind of spot when that's happening. But I think she's being criticised because she's just doing a terrible job. You know, and good on her for hanging on in there, but she could be doing a better job of it as well, I think.
Is there any more sort of update on whether a second referendum is any more likely or just one of those other options that keeps being repeated ad infinitum by all the journalists?
I think that there's a few preparations behind the scenes for if that does happen. And so, I mean, the corridors of Westminster at the moment, there's just so much plotting going on. And I mean, the feeling with the second referendum is lots of people who voted to remain are really pushing for this because they think they, you know, it's a done thing that they would win. But then, of course, you know, you need to remind people, well, actually, what if Leave win again? You know, it's not a fait accompli.
And then which type of Leave is it again,
if that does happen? So I think that's a more important thing to focus on.
It almost seems like it could be the perfect solution to pass the power back to the people, but then it might just open up even more questions and problems unless there's a clear answer again.
Yes.
All right, shall we leave it there for that one, Sue?
Yes.
Let's move on to the other big story from the last couple of days, really, which concerns Prince Philip.
Yes, so Prince Philip, who was in a crash this week, and hit a car with two women driving in it, and a 9-month-old baby. He's back on the roads again. So, as the Sunday Times say, quick eye test and Prince Philip is back in the driving seat with no seatbelt. When I first heard this story, I assumed that he was just driving around the Sandringham estate. But no, he's out on the roads, and I'm not, you know, not saying that people in 97 should necessarily be banned from driving. However, you know, you need to be wearing a seatbelt. You need to be a little bit more with it than he seems to be.
Yeah, I didn't realise when the story first broke a couple of days ago that he was actually driving the car.
Yes.
I just assumed in my sort of ageist, horrible way that, oh, he must have been a passenger
in
the car.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And then I realised that he was actually driving it.
Yes.
And it's opened a big debate, hasn't it, about whether age should be a factor in whether people are fit to drive. But
yes.
I would argue there's plenty of 25-year-olds on the road who are maybe not particularly fit to drive as well.
Yes.
Maybe you can't use age just as a discriminating factor.
Well, that's true. And if there's one person in the country that has got people at his beck and call who could drive him places, you know, but I think there is a thing with him that he wants to maintain his independence and probably gets a bit irritable by having people fussing around him all the time. So, you know, he wants to be out on the roads. But then again, he's got to take other people's, you know, he's got to think about the risk factor and wearing a seatbelt. I can't remember when this first came in, like 85 or something like that.
Was it only that recently?
Yeah, it's
was
fairly
it?
Fairly recent, because I'm 43 now, so, and I remember when it happened, you know, so when I was very little we didn't have to. But that's long enough for him to realise, yep, I should be wearing a seatbelt. And one of the women who was injured, she's really upset that she hasn't received a proper apology from the palace, and she says that she is a fan of the royals, and she's almost quite looking forward to having a phone call from the Queen to say, sorry about this. And she's had a fairly sort of, you know, sniffy note from the palace communications team, but nothing really like a bunch of flowers or any sort of apology.
So they have had some kind of contact with the royals, but not necessarily
really
a personal one.
No, exactly. And if you think if this happened anywhere else on the roads, wouldn't he be a bit more liable? I don't know, if it wasn't him. So whether that's it, that he doesn't want to accept liability because then he could be prosecuted, I don't know. He seems to exist in a slightly different bubble to everyone.
Yeah,
other.
And it has sort of thrown open that debate, so we'll see if any further change comes to that one, definitely. Let's just squeeze in one more story. Can we do the one about the eels that you found?
The eels.
Which did surprise me a bit this morning.
Yes, where have my eels gone? Yeah, so this is what sort of headline that catches your eye. Cocaine in Thames makes eels hyperactive. And being an eely person, then I couldn't help but notice that one as well.
So you need to watch out for those eels in Ely.
Yeah, exactly.
So where is it come from?
It's just, well, it's all these people
the
in London taking too much cocaine at the weekend.
And then in the sewers, I guess, it sort of drains into the river and...
Yeah, so it comes out through their system. And so the levels of cocaine found in the Thames go up at the weekends when everyone's out partying. And then this separate study has shown that it's making the eels hyperactive. So maybe they're all out clubbing over the weekend.
Just dancing non-stop.
Yeah. So it's pretty lively in the Thames at the weekend.
Interesting. Right, so stay right there. We'll be back with Sukiyo. She's the founder of a digital marketing agency, Sukiyo. We'll be back with her after this.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
So we're with Sukiyo. We are in the middle of our newspaper review. And should we start with a story about Oxbridge then, Sue? A local story, this one.
Yeah, nice good news story. So, I mean, we do a lot of work with different Cambridge colleges, and there's always this feeling that there's this real, you know, authentic urge from within the university to open things up and encourage applications from students from a wider range of backgrounds than the traditional kind of Eton route. And we've got two different schools here in Newham, which is quite a troubled borough in London. So in the Sunday Times refer it as gangland schools, in inverted commas. And they've done really well. They've had, so the London Academy of Excellence, known as the Eton of the East End, has got a record 26 pupils. 18 of them from black or ethnic minority backgrounds, with offers from Oxford or Cambridge. And then the nearby Brampton and Manor Academy, they've got 41 students who've received offers last week as well. So it's great news.
Now, I'm guessing it's not as simple as one secret that has unlocked this for them? Does it say anything about the methods that they've used to achieve this?
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you don't suddenly go from, you know, this very difficult school environment to all of a sudden, boom, Oxford and Cambridge. You know, it's a bit more difficult than that. But it's saying what they've done, they've invited it. Both have copied the methods of private schools, with most of the sixth form applying for a place at one of the two top universities. And this is, you know, you've got to be in it to win it. So, I mean, that's the thing that I found as well from conversations with people within the university, that they find that people kind of almost self-select out.
Ah.
So they choose not to apply
because
they think they haven't got a hope. Whereas what these schools have done, they've invited in former pupils and people that have gone to Oxford and Cambridge, and they've found out more about the system, the process, and they've got coaching and a bit more motivation and inspiration.
And I guess made it seem like something that could be achieved by people within this room.
Yes, yeah.
Which I think is a very powerful message, isn't it? When you start to see yourself as someone who can go that way and achieve something like that.
Yes, and I think the colleges, and I know a number of them are doing this already anyway, but they have to go out and reach out to schools and reach students at a younger age. So, you know, if you only talk to sixth forms, then by that point, children have already decided, oh, I don't know, this isn't for me, or wouldn't even occur to them to try. Whereas if you get them when they're, say, 12, then that's when they're starting to think, oh, yeah, OK, that is something that I could do.
That's a good point, actually, starting earlier than
GCSE
A-level age even, just to start people thinking about that as a possible route.
Yes, exactly.
I know the University of Cambridge does a lot of work, actually, doesn't it, on trying to promote these messages and getting people from different sorts of backgrounds to apply.
But definitely.
The more that can be done along those lines, the better.
Yes. And I suppose if you're someone that's been to Eton, then maybe your father, maybe your mother went to Cambridge, and they all know those extra little bits about how to fill in the application form and what the interview is really like. And you may even have visited Cambridge, because that can be quite daunting. You know, if you're from a rough borough in London, you know, you haven't really been outside there much. So what they're trying to do, I think, is bridge that gap and bring people in from Oxford and Cambridge so they can actually have conversations with people who've been, who know what it's like. There's a lovely story here. I mean, there was a girl who arrived in Britain aged 15 and she only roughly knew the alphabet, you know, and she's had that encouragement from the school.
Wow, that's an amazing journey then, isn't it? To go from that to Oxbridge within 3 years or so.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So that's really good. And
she sounds like a very impressive student.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's great. So, you know, little by little, you know, change is going to come, because otherwise we're missing out on all of this untapped talent.
Absolutely.
In the country, which is a shame for all of us.
For everybody, yeah. OK, let's move on. You've got a story about Heather Mills, which caught your eye.
Yeah, we've got a couple of foodie ones. So lots of, obviously, because it's Veganuary, lots of vegan.
Oh, I didn't realise it was actually Veganuary.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh,
have you not seen Piers Morgan moaning about this continually?
So this is to do with the sausage roll, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, Greg's introduced a vegan sausage roll and it upset Piers Morgan.
Have you tasted one of those?
I haven't. I am vegan myself.
Yeah, you mentioned, so I wondered if that was going to be something that appealed to you.
Well, there's been this explosion of food coming out all over the place. So Waitrose and Marks and Spencer's and Pret are very good at this and all these places. So I could eat ready meals and fast food every day of the week at the moment. It's all of a sudden come from nowhere. So
Wasn't that long ago that there was virtually nothing vegan people out
there,
was there?
And now it's everywhere. So if this has upset Piers Morgan, then that's fine by me.
So what's Heather Mills up to with it?
So, well, I think the thing that caught my eye here is that, of course, Linda McCartney, Paul McCartney's... another one of his women that he's been married to. So, of course, she's famous for launching her vegetarian range. And now Heather Mills, who's now vegan, is going to be setting up Britain's biggest vegan food factory, turning protein from peas, seaweed and other plants into substitutes for meat, fish and dairy products. And it's going to be somewhere up in the north where she's from. But I just thought it's quite interesting that she'll be setting up this other company as well. And it's almost like a rival. And I know it's not, but I'm being a bit tabloidy and finding a few
trying to set up a fight.
Really but I hadn't realised as well, it says sort of later on in this article, that actually the Linda McCartney brand was sold a number of years ago to a US company, and then it's changed hands several times since.
Oh, right. Okay.
Whereas I always assumed it was still in the hands of the McCartney family.
And let me guess, is it some kind of meat, you know, burger chain or something like that who've bought it, who can run it into the ground?
Probably.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Probably putting all sorts of dodgy stuff back in. But But Heather Mills, she's going for the flexitarian market. So it's people that are thinking, okay, well, I still want to eat meat, still want to eat cheese,
but
and everything.
Maybe not so much.
Yeah, just want to try a little bit of something else, you know? So, so that was interesting. But then on the same page, just the other side of the coin, really, at a time when everyone's trying to be in a January health kick, you've got students in various schools around the country using Uber to deliver McDonald's at lunchtime.
Now, that's staggering, isn't it?
Which is a bit naughty.
So obviously we know about Deliveroo delivering food, but not actually Uber drivers picking it up. That's a whole different thing, isn't it?
And there's various rules to do with, you know, anti-obesity to stop this kind of thing happening, you know, so you try not to have takeaways too close to a school and all of that, whereas the Sunday Times has done an investigation and found that Uber Eats is still quite happy to deliver takeaways at lunchtime to a school address.
Yeah, they'll take the job, won't they, wherever the job is.
And there's it's just one nice closing line here from a boy who was boasting on social media. Am I off to school early just to get Mackie D's breakfast and getting it delivered? Yes, he says. I feel like a king.
I mean, I'm a teacher myself, and I find this staggering. I think we would take quite a dim view if anyone tried to do this.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the future. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
So thank you very much for your time this morning and for flicking through the papers. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us, and have a lovely weekend.
And you.
Thank you.